Investing Insights with Right Property Group. Exploring trends in real estate and helping property investors gain financial security.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Investing Insights with Right Property Group. My name is Steve Waters and with me as always is Victor Kumar. Vic, it's been Easter.
It has been.
Nothing really big happened in the market.
I know, the property market gets resurrected.
Well, depending on who you listen to and what you what you read, it's funny, you know, because there's so many opinions from the educated, the uneducated, the broke brother-in-law at the barbecue, as we refer to, or sister-in-law. Everyone's got an opinion. Unfortunately, not many people really know what is going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's probably because most people haven't been through multiple cycles. And also, if you look at it, most people aren't able to read the true fundamentals on the ground because they're not consistently on the ground. So what they're interpreting is largely, again, opinions of other people, what's on the media in terms of, like, you know, attention-grabbing headlines. And then every cycle, we tend to find people that come out of the woodworks that seem to have the credibility behind them in terms of the number of letters after the names, and interpret data their way. And, you know, realistically, if you made predictions, and that's what they are, predictions, right? You make them long enough, you'll get a few right. Yeah. And then as you see this cycle changing, and when it comes from a boom market, which we had, definitely had a boom market during COVID, right? And then there is always a change in cycle to either flat or a more slower growth phase, but still very sustained, or a sharp drop or a slower drop. When this phase comes in, there are a lot of conflicting information and conflicting data that most people aren't able to interpret, or they interpret it on face value without correlating with what market is truly doing. And then we get these predictions.
It's a good point, because during a boom market, the media and everybody's opinion is of basically the same. Mm-hmm. Everything is going up. It's double-digit growth. It's a millionaire overnight. It's this. Conversely, in a bear market where everything is free-falling, which, side note, it's not. But let's just pretend that it was. It's very easy for people's opinions to then just say, well, everything is for people, we told you so, it's because of this, there'll be no bottom, it'll continue like this forever and ever. There's never, as we've often talked about, this normality piece. You know, buyer's market, seller's market, no, it's just a market. Mm-hmm. And when it's just a market, which we believe is what we're in now, that's when the data and the conflicting opinions really come to the surface, because suddenly it's not all one direction. It's not all up or it's not all down. Now people need to actually understand. They need to educate themselves on all these pieces of data and overlay that with the ground truth, as we refer to, and then make a decision on what to do. Or if you're a commentator, I guess it's easy to keep down the narrative of whether you're a more on the bear side or the bull side, mm-hmm. or you just might be a journo that's changing their opinion every second day. But Vic, today I wanted to talk about something that I truly do believe this moment in time that we're in, and it essentially that is checkmate.
Mm-hmm.
Checkmate
we're
Australia.
We're playing property chess today, are we?
No, I can't play chess. You know, I do not have the patience.
Actually, I do play chess. Badly, but I do play chess.
Yeah, I think we all play badly. Yeah.
I have got scars of being beaten by a 9-year-old back in Fiji.
I just can't get into it. Although it's one of those games, I think, where if you lose, it's because you made a mistake.
Correct.
Yeah, there is no other reason.
Yeah, or you're not able to read 4 or 5 moves ahead, right, as to what the repercussions of your move is going to be 2 or 3 moves down the track, which is property.
Good point. But it's not the reason I thought we'd talk about the checkmate position that we're in. And I truly do believe it is checkmate. Mm-hmm. Checkmate Australia. The reason is because we are in a moment in time, and now referring to the chess, that what the future holds
mm-hmm.
and the moves that we that the government and the powers that be today do, it will be a damned if they do and a damned if they don't scenario. The system is broken, and no matter what we do going forward, there are certain parts of the entire ecosystem, being macro and micro economics, that will suffer.
Yes.
There is no way out of this. Mm-hmm. There cannot be. And I guess what I really mean, and I'm not being an alarmist, I'm not being a conspiracist or anything like that, far from it. But when we just look at the absolute fundamentals, just the bare bones, dumb it right down scenario, we all know, because every single person is talking about it, and this is a point of truth, that we are undersupplied.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, undersupplied. Yeah, historically, at a low point in time in terms of supply. We know that the pipeline is empty.
Mm-hmm.
I read that we're some 100,000+ properties, dwellings, short. Behind. Yeah. Short, yeah. And we have very high numbers of people coming to the country to reside, and the government wants that because we're under-resourced in terms of skilled migrants and what have you. So when we put all that into the pot, and as we've spoken about several times, several thousand times, that we're in a damned if you do, damned if you don't position. People mm-hmm. are living on the streets as we know it. They're doing it tough. Yet we need immigration.
Yes, we need immigration to grow.
So what's the outcome? Where's the solution?
Mm.
And when is the solution? And I'm not necessarily talking about the end result, but what are the mechanisms that are in play today to give us the solution? None.
Mm.
Everyone talks this big game. Government talks this huge game about the housing scheme and corporate Australia becoming involved in the build to rent scenarios and superannuation funds and the like. But I just don't see it.
Yeah. And something's got to give, right? So if I bring in an analogy, and we agree, right, that the system is broken. The system is broken. We don't have enough supply. Builders are going bust by the dozen. You've got immigration at next level. The students are coming back in as well. So that adds to the number of dwellings required. Well,
just to interrupt, sorry, but even last week, two major, major builders in the country went into administration, liquidation. Yeah. Some 1,700 homes on one of them alone under construction, and another, I think it was 500 or 700 exchanged building contracts that hadn't started to turn dirt yet. That's just one of them, let alone the other, let alone the smaller building company that has also folded, but it's just not making the news.
I read somewhere that there are more builders going bust this year than compared to last year, and there's to the tune of between 4 to 10 builders going bust per week in Australia at the moment. It's crazy. So if we look at that, so obviously the system's broken, right? And if we're trying to fix it, we will further break one of the components of it. And if I bring it back to medical analogy, right? So if you've got a bad fracture and it hasn't set well, so it's healed, but it hasn't set well. So let's say it's a forearm and it's still a little bit bent. The correct procedure is to actually break it again and reset it. And that's what we need to do with the property market, is we need to break something to actually reset the market for it to then be on a straight and narrow, as opposed to be a bent market as such.
And I guess if you were to have the RBA governor in here at the moment, he would say that's what we're trying to do mm-hmm. to the economy.
Yep.
As are other RBA or the equivalents around the world, is raise the interest rates, make people hurt, to stop the spending, to drive down inflation into the perfect gap, and then we can recalibrate and reset. But the problem with it this time is that a major recipient of the higher interest rates are the mortgage holders and the ability to then to supply accommodation, so on and so forth. And that problem in that part of the economy continues to compound. And I'm talking about the lack of accommodation. So you're right. There, no matter what they do, there's going to be an absolute consequence somewhere in the future.
Yeah. So they need to choose which one.
Yeah. So what's the lesser of two evils? So do we momentarily park inflation aside and say, well, let's allow the credit system to do its thing and put money into the ecosystem, into the finance ecosystem, so that people can build, buy, provide accommodation, or have their provide their own accommodation. And the potential outcome of that is another bull market and higher inflation. But if we don't, well, here's something. If they keep going down the path that they're going, and there are arguments for and against, but if they were to keep down this path and the supply line continued to be non-existent, yet at the same time they're encouraging immigration because we need skilled migrants into the country, there's no argument against that, there's no doubt of that. Mm-hmm. What happens if you're in another part of the world, you're entertaining coming to Australia because it's a great place, who wouldn't want to come here, but your friend says, oh yeah, I was thinking of going to Australia and packing up my life to go and move to Australia to live and work, but haven't you heard? There's nowhere to live.
Yeah.
You can't rent anything. And if you do, you'll be working 15 jobs to pay for it. Mm. Slight exaggeration. Or you'll be living in a car or in a tent. Then I would say, if I was in their shoes, well, I'll pick somewhere else.
Yeah.
I'll go, I don't know, wherever. Canada, US, somewhere. Europe, UK. And so if that happens, the flow of labour, immigrants, new people to the country stops. And it puts us in a worse position, or arguably a worse position, because now we don't have the people in the country to sustain us.
And therefore growth stops.
Economic growth stops. Sure, you don't add any more to the problem around a lack of accommodation in terms of that scenario, but suddenly the greater economic outlook is far more challenged.
Yeah.
So they're damned if they do. Something has to break. Well, it is broken. Hence, I thought, well, you know what? It is checkmate.
Yeah, it is very much so, right? So if we look at the moving parts, right? So obviously credit is a big factor in there. And we haven't actually, we've actually slowed down credit because we've kept the assessment rate still high. So people are willing to invest, people are willing to purchase, people are willing to upgrade or downgrade their homes. But they can't because they don't qualify for finance because of the high assessment rate. And we can't drop the assessment rate just yet because it'll undo all of the interest rate rise potential of slowing the market or slowing the inflation. The minute we release finance, it'll start the ride again of all these people that are sitting on the sidelines jumping into the market. And then you look at all of the factors, right? Rents at an absolute high. So the yields are pretty good. When you really look at it, the last time we saw yields this good was getting into the GFC and slightly before that as well, right? So you had this 5%ers, the 6%ers popping up.
In Metro.
Yeah, in Metro, yeah. And Sydney is a good metric to look at to see how the market's panning out. Doesn't mean that you do have to invest in Sydney, right? You can invest anywhere in Australia so long as it is in a good sustainable area where there's population coming, blah, blah. So you know all the gist of investing, right? But if you look at it from what's really driving the sentiment, the minute Sydney hits 5%, and arguably we are at that with quite a few of the properties that we're buying, it starts to bring that confidence back. So the confidence is there. The ability to jump into the market isn't there. So if we fix that bit, it'll get the market going again. It'll start the more investments happening. So it'll start fixing a bit of the supply issue. It's still very much an undersupplied market.
It won't happen quickly, though.
No, it's a very slow process, right? So the sooner we do it, the quicker we'll get to that end result of getting it to an equilibrium place. Then when you look at if we did that, we're trying to curb inflation by increasing the cash rate. And so it'll start undoing that. And I dare say that perhaps RBA did make the wrong move in pausing the interest rates this month.
Oh, that's that, a big call, Victor. Unpopular call.
Absolutely, it is an unpopular call. But if you look at what's really happened on the ground, the minute that happened was that all of the agents I'm talking to, they are reporting an increased number of incoming calls of people starting to look for properties. So it's actually people are saying, hang on, I think we've hit the peak. And maybe it's time to jump back in.
We talked about this 4 months ago when we said when we get to that terminal rate, or what people perceive as the terminal cash rate, and that could be the pause, the pause that we've just had, that will be, for a lot of people, the trigger point to say, right, I know what I'm dealing with, time to jump in.
And the turn's going to be a lot faster than people think. Right?
Correct. The consequence of that, which not a lot of people are, I guess, factoring in, which will compound the problem, get to the point, Steve, is that already we've got very low stock on market. Yes, stock on market has ebbed higher over the last, say, 4 to 5 weeks, but it's still remarkably low, seasonally adjusted, and where it should be.
Yep.
Now that we've had a rate pause, you are going to see potentially a lot of sellers who were contemplate selling for whatever the reason, upsize, downsize, or necessity. They're going to say, well, hang on, if there's more people on the market now, because that's what's throughout the media, and there's been that sort of 1.4% growth according to the media and the data warehouses, rates have stayed where they are. I'm not going to put my property on the market because the market is starting to perpetuate. So I'll hang off a little bit. So therefore there's less stock on market, more people contemplating or activating to get in, and you get that bookend effect with all that compression, I guess. And it could be the start of another run. Could be. And I say that quite deliberately because the RBA have said, the governor has said, look, just because we pause it,
doesn't mean it's the end of it.
Doesn't mean it's the end of it. Yeah, they might very well turn around and say, look, you know, we've let you take a breath. The data is in, but we're going again. And yeah, that'll put a lot of hesitation into people's minds. And whether that's the right thing to do or not, I guess there's no right answer. But what people need to understand is that the increasing rents is a big part of the inflation picture as well.
Yep. So we need to actually take that out of data.
Well, yeah, well, they can't.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's a thing. It's a real thing.
That's it.
And so the more that that goes on, this comes back to the damned if you do, damned if you don't. I guess the question for them is, which part of the economy do we want to hurt the most? And what part of the economy are we willing to look in another direction and so just let it do its thing?
Which is the lesser evil?
Which is the lesser evil. And I think they're going to get to a point. In fact, I think this moment in time, this last, call it 4 year block, right? From the beginning of COVID, clearly through till today, will definitely go down in history. I mean, it already has because of COVID and the like, yeah? But what's happening in today's, I guess, worldwide economic scenarios and circumstances will definitely go down as a historical moment, like the GFC, like the dot-com bubble burst, so on and so forth. This will go down because there's no easy fix.
I think it's
more complex today than it ever has been.
Absolutely. And I think it'll be a big marker on the timeline. So you've got the GFC, you've got the EPRA handbrake, and now you've got this as big markers in the timeline, right? But this is what I want to stress. It's a timeline, right? So if you're just only investing at the big markers, you're not really going to get good run rate. We need to be taking a 3 to 5 year approach to any property that we buy, but we're looking at least holding it for 1 to 2 cycles. Now, arguably, each area has got a different cycle in terms of time frame. So we need to understand where we're buying, where the cycle is currently in that area in terms of what we're buying, and then plan it out, map it out, right? So it's not going to be the huge growth that we had during COVID when this cycle restarts. It's going to be a slower train, but it will be a more consistent, longer running train, in my opinion, opposed to that big inverted V growth.
Yeah, and let's have a look at the reasons why that V growth, as you refer to it, was there at the beginning of COVID, was because money was
very cheap.
The cheapest that it's ever been, and credit was flowing, and that allowed people to buy everything from houses to helicopters and everything in between across the world. The consequence of that is where we're at today with the higher inflation and the credit and monetary policies tightening right up. But we had that flick the switch instant growth in terms of the real estate market. Today I would argue that the pieces of the real estate puzzle are more today. We're in a better situation today if we just look at the reasons for growth today than what we were
before COVID
or even at the beginning of COVID.
Absolutely.
Yeah? But they're not going to release the handbrake in terms of credit like they did before. Mm. The rates are not going to, and I should never say never, but I don't see rates getting back down to 0.5% cash rate.
We'd like to see that.
Well, we would.
In a perverse way, but no, it won't.
Yeah, but even if we did see that, then we'd be back in this position in the years to come, yeah. Right? So I don't think we're going to see that V growth, as we say. I think it'll be as the gradual untightening of the credit system happens, the more momentum mm-hmm. will happen. We'll see some flourishes along the way for sure. But I believe this is going to be a very strong cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the rate of growth in terms of a percentage over a given amount of time is going to be what it was during COVID is yet to be seen. But without a shadow of a doubt, the indicators are there
mm-hmm.
for a very prosperous time. But you need to be in the game, because if you don't play the game plays you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you need to be really making those moves now to be in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to check in with the listeners as to whether you caught on to what Steve just said, right? There's going to be a gradual release of credit. It's not going to be open all the floodgates, money's very easy. It'll be gradual. And it's important that we actually do that, because we don't want to create that runaway market again. And so why it is really pertinent that you understand that it's a gradual release of credit is that this is where you need to be constantly consistently checking in with your broker. Make it a habit every quarter, every 2 months even, to check in with the broker to say, has my lending capacity changed? Because lenders will find new products. Lenders will start releasing the credit that they're holding back onto. I mean, it's simple stuff like I've just learned today that we've got a provider that goes 90% on self-managed super funds, which is amazing, right? So now they found a way of getting that.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
So that's
fresh off the press.
Breaking news.
Yes.
It's and I can imagine there'd be a certain cohort of listeners going, say what?
Yeah.
Rewind it.
Yeah, yeah. You will pay LMI or a risk fee if with this particular lender. I won't name the lender, right?
What's the rate?
I don't know yet. I'm still finding the facts.
Does it matter?
It does not matter. And here's the thing, right? So if you're sitting on the sidelines right now, and again, check with the accountant before you act on what I'm going to say now. If you're sitting on the sidelines, you cannot borrow in your personal name or the trust that you've set up. Have you had a look at what the lending capacity is within the super fund? And there are quite a bit of changes in the super fund where you can park a lot more money in your super fund. And perhaps, depending on age, that's the path you may want to go. Again, check with your accountant.
That's a really interesting one. But I guess that's the point, right, in terms of the credit ecosystem, is that the banks will find a way to put the money into the system.
That's my point.
Because they've got a duty to make money and report back to their shareholders, right? You don't see banks with savings.
Yep.
Right? They need it out there working, as we've often talked about before. So they will find a way within the rules, within the regulations of what they can and can't do, but it'll be a gradual, I guess, effect.
Yes.
And then I truly do believe we'll get to a point in time where the momentum will be strong enough and loud enough, which is important, loud enough for potentially, and I'll go out on a limb and say this, for another FOMO market.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's an underlying current there already
in
and around
people
FOMO.
Aren't able to
yet. Yeah, it's like we can see that, and the buyer's agents are reporting back to us, and the agents are coming back to us and saying, look, there is this pent up. Demand there, it's just the ability to get money, as we all know. So as those little incremental changes happen, I guess it'll gather pace.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the thought processes we all had was that when this market changes, the interest rates go up, there'll be a lot of delinquent loans out there. The reality is there aren't any forced sales or many forced sales out there. The only forced sales out there are the ones that are the wrong investments they bought, or it's the properties with multiple warts on it that they can't sustain anymore. The banks will be working with the borrowers to help hold on to the properties, because it's not in the bank's interest to foreclose on them.
They don't want delinquent loans.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't want them. They would rather you hold the loan. That's how they make their money.
And I think we've started the trend of mortgage pause during COVID. And that may be something that the banks would look at if you're absolutely struggling.
Jeez, that's a big call. I mean, that was always there.
It was always there.
If you
there,
were under hardship, you could ring up and negotiate a time frame or whatever it may be. I mean, that's always there. And if you are experiencing hardship, don't bury your head in the sand. Don't not return your bank's phone calls. The best bit of advice that we could give you in and around that is to get on the phone, get on the front foot to the banks or to your lender and have a conversation with them. But if you bury your head in the sand and run away from the problem, it'll hurt you.
Yeah, keep up the communication.
Correct. Yep. So I think the real problem here, Vic, is if you could run a poll of people that were contemplating purchasing, whether that be a homeowner or an investor, I would be very surprised if the poll wasn't circa 70-80% in terms of people saying, yeah, we think all the pieces are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good environment to do it
yep.
if we could just put our hands on the money. Because I don't think people don't have an information problem today.
Not anymore.
What they do have is an execution problem.
Yeah.
It's that little bit of hesitance. Should I? Is now the time? Because they're trying to time the market rather than timing the market.
Mm.
And go back a couple of podcasts, we spoke about that. You should, I guess, abolish both those cliches from your mind to some degree. But the execution doesn't just happen by saying, well, you know, let's do it. We start. There's a workup period to it. And when you cannot purchase, if you're a prolific purchaser and you're forced into consolidation, as we all get put into that box at one stage or another, it's a great time to fine-tune what you have. Assess the portfolio. Is it fragile or is it agile? Another podcast we did 6 months or thereabouts ago, because it'll really highlight, I guess this is a good time to show that whether your portfolio is actually built on a house of cards.
Yeah,
no pun intended.
Yep, absolutely. And the reality of it is that unless you take that long, hard look at the portfolio, you can't really progress, right? Because you need to know where you're standing to begin with. And in a lot of cases, there's been people where they try once and then they find that, hang on, you know, the bank said no, or the interest rate is this much. What we really need to do at this point in time in the cycle is, first of all, not think of the property, think of mentality first. We've got all of the hallmarks of a strong run on property. Rents are high, less supply in property. We're not building enough either. There's lots of builders that are going bust. And we've got more than 500K permanent residents coming into Australia each year.
Let alone students.
Yeah, let alone students and the backpackers and so forth. So they all lead to a very sustained growth market. So we need to get that into our mentality. And then we need to look at, okay, how can I get my hands on money? We, at this point in the cycle, should not be in interest rate sensitive. Now, I'll qualify that in a minute. But we need to make sure that we are able to borrow as much money as possible and buy the right asset. Now, when I say that we don't want to be interest rate sensitive, there is a caveat to that. If it is well beyond your capability of holding onto that loan, remember in a couple of podcasts ago, I said that the amount of debt is irrelevant. It's the number of zeros you need to earn per week to hold on to this debt, right? So long as you can work that out and ensure that it doesn't substantially change your lifestyle to the negative, you could borrow at 9%, 10%, and ride the wave up when lending becomes easier, you'd restructure the debt and you'd benefit from what you have done, which is counter cyclical to what everyone else is doing, which is I'm going to wait until my rates come down a little bit so I can actually feel good about paying 4.5% as opposed to 6%.
Do you know what's really interesting there? When you mentioned counter-cyclical, I actually don't think that is as big a thing as what it used to be in the yesteryear. Once again, thanks to technology and the available of information and education.
Because the cycles turn a lot faster.
Correct, right? And so, once again, there are so many people that just know that they should, but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, once again, that education piece is there. Because information and education used to be privy to a very small portion. Yeah. Now it's readily available and everything. The other thing I wanted to talk about, Vic, was because of this checkmate position, a couple of podcasts ago, might have been 4, 5, 6, whatever, where we talked about maximizing bracket creep. Mm-hmm. So when you can, the value of your assets into what you're purchasing gets larger for the bigger return.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. As what happened during the GFC, or the tail end of the GFC, and the lack of available credit, therefore borrowing capacity, what we will see, and we're already starting to see it, is actually the complete opposite of maximizing your bracket creep.
Mm-hmm.
You'll start to see people invest where they can, which is the lower
price
loan amounts,
yep,
which is the more affordable corridors throughout the country.
Mm.
And as a result of that, that will put more pressure on it because, once again, still no supply, more people looking to do it, mm-hmm, which will increase the prices. The same thing happened at the end of the tail end of the GFC. Mm. And the same thing happened with rents, which we're already seeing. And in fact, we talked about this probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago, saying watch for those corridors throughout the country which are affordable because they're going to be the recipient of some massive rental growth.
Yep.
Purely because of economics 101.
Mm.
And here we are again with the GFC, or different trigger points, different results, different factors, but the outcome from in terms of the asset class will be the same.
Yeah, absolutely it will. And I guess this is coming from years of being in the investment game, right? Not necessarily running Right Property Group between the two of us. It is actually our personal journeys in property that helps us get this knowledge, right? Because when you really look at it, there's always going to be conflicting signals in the market, right? And the conflicting signals is largely because of the information and the way information is being delivered and who you believe with. Because if you go down one vein, guess what? Your Facebook feed and your social media feed goes down that vein. So you need to be very mindful of what you're searching. And we also need to be very mindful not to become over exuberant about property as well. So it needs to be balancing act there.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You shouldn't all be in one asset class, mm-hmm, nor should you be all in on one type of asset in that asset class, so to speak, because things do change. I mean, COVID, as we all know, COVID has changed the world as we know it,
mm,
you know, for the good and the bad in a weird kind of way. But I think that the most important part is the way that we look at it and how do we act around it. Once again, a bit like if you're struggling to pay your mortgage, burying your head in the sand and waiting for an outcome without having any input is not going to get you anywhere.
It's madness.
It's crazy. Mm. And I have no doubt that in 12 to 18 short months, there are going to be a lot of people that said shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at, you know, your comment about during the GFC, during COVID, we wanted to get to the highest value asset, right? And now we're starting to think of, okay, let's go to an asset that we can afford now. So what it highlights is that the strategy has not changed. However, the asset class has, because of all of these dictating factors, the major one being finance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and therefore affordability. Affordability is not necessarily just the ability to pay the loans. It's the ability to qualify for the loans to begin with.
Yeah. Qualifying is the easy part, mm-hmm, in some ways. It's affording it.
Yeah,
is the other. And unfortunately, because it's a really good point, unfortunately we'll start to see the stories on certain news programs about the bank gave me money when they shouldn't have.
Mm. It's all on you, man.
Yeah. I was going to say, I nearly jumped on a high horse, but you beat me to it. At the end of the day, as we've often referred to, there are two types of affordability. One is what the bank says you can afford, and the other is what you know you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that is wildly mismatched.
Yep.
So make sure that you do your own affordability. And I think we also talked about with this whole checkmate position, I think, is that if we defer in terms of the problems that the economy has today, and let's just be, I guess, more pointed and talk about the asset class being residential real estate and commercial real estate,
mm-hmm,
to some point. But if we defer the problem that we have today, it is going to be a God almighty mess.
Yeah.
in a very, very short period of time worse than what it is, because it'll be a compounding effect in terms of a lack of accommodation. And then how do you resurrect from that point?
Yeah. Like it's very hard.
It we all like repeating ourselves, but this is a, some would argue, depending on who you listen to, if we found the solution to the undersupply that we have today, it's still a 3 to 6 year turnaround. Best case. Oh,
yeah, absolutely. And you only got to look at the bank bill rates, right? So the 3 year bond rates.
Correct.
They are cheaper than the mortgages today, right? So there is a very good a thought process that in 3 years' time, finance will be far cheaper. And if you look at all of these things that are broken that need to be fixed, we need to cast our eyes back to the Great Depression in Australia, right? So after the war.
It was like when you were 21 or something.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
21st birthday during the Great Depression.
You know, I'm Hindu, so we believe in reincarnation, so I got reincarnated. So where I was going with that is that if you look back then, inflation was, and I don't remember the exact figures, but I remember 16%. Inflation was 16%, 1.6, yeah? And it barreled up within a period of 8 months. Property was largely unaffordable. Banks were foreclosing left, right, and center. And people thought that was the end of property, right? End of the economy. But what really happened was there was a huge transfer of wealth. Transfer from the people that were not prepared or did not understand or did not know how to tack to the people that were informed. So we know now that today information is very readily available. So we need to now pick what information we're taking on board and how to tax so that the transfer of wealth that'll happen in the next cycle comes to us. It's as simple as that.
It's, as you were saying that, I think people wouldn't argue that they know what's around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question is, so what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, it's the execution bit, isn't it?
Yeah, ultimately that's what it comes back to. I mean, I read a really, I'm not sure if I agree with it wholeheartedly, something in the US, whereas property equals, what owning property is actually getting paid to borrow.
Now, interesting concept, right?
It's an interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I guess, well, one, you'd need positive cash flow or growth. Mm. Hopefully you get both at a given point in time. But I'm not sure I agree 100% of that, because the problem with borrowing money when you're not educated on the risks,
and how to mitigate them.
And how to mitigate them is that you're then taking on leveraged debt in a speculative manner.
Mm.
And that 9 times out of 10 will hurt you considerably somewhere in the future. Unless you get super, super lucky and you're in and out of a market, which you know we don't advocate. So that whole education around your own personal circumstances and obviously the borrowing factors and how to mitigate the risk is where the real...
That's where the gold is.
That's where the real gold is. And we've talked about this for years, well before podcasts were invented, is in and around buffers.
Yep.
In and around liquidity. I want to very quickly talk about liquidity only because we mention it every single podcast. Those that are liquid and potentially can't borrow money are having a field day right now.
Absolutely they are.
Without a shadow of a doubt, because we see it.
Mm.
Because they don't need to borrow. They'd love to borrow, but it doesn't corner them into a position.
And once they've got the property and the income from it and they've fixed the issues with the property to make it lender friendly.
Correct.
They're able to restructure mortgages regardless of whether they're able to borrow now or not. It may be that the loan to value ratio is fairly low, so they get an asset lend, or they may hold out until the finance market changes and they're able to then pull their money back out and then some and park it away again to wait for the next opportunity.
Recycling the debt to some degree. But even if they took a 50% LVR position just to recoup that liquidity again. But I'd love to go back and see how long ago we started saying, watch this moment in time. Mm. Get ready, it's coming.
Yeah. So for those that don't understand that LVR position, right? Depending on which entity you've bought and what entity you've bought, there is that old rule of 1.1 cover or 1.3 cover, depending on the lender. So this is at principal and interest, 25-year loan, where the rent covers the repayments by 1.1 or 1.3 times, depends on the lender. So if you are able to demonstrate that the mortgage repayment, the rents actually go 1.1 times the cover on that property, you're able to determine the LVR, and therefore you're able to claw some of the money back. Again, there are a few other rules around it. Your broker needs to have a chat with you. And if you're unsure and you've got unencumbered properties right now, you may want to reach out to us. We can point you in the right direction. It is definitely a strategy. Remembering that property investing, it's all about finance and how creative you can get with finance and how cheaply you can get finance without focusing on the interest rate. We're talking cheaply in terms of structure. We're talking cheaply in terms of product and the availability as to how much the bank's willing to lend you.
And your appetite for debt.
Yeah.
Because it could be, I spoke to someone the other day who had a very big amount of equity in their principal place of residence, and they had drawn that down as a, I think it was a line of credit, mm-hmm. off memory, and they're just buying from that line of credit now because they need to be reactive to the market. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go through the whole potentially 6 to 8 weeks pre-approval mm-hmm. process when they want to be, once again, reactive to opportunities that present themselves now. Once they've secured it, they'll start the finance, but they can pay for it out of the line of credit. Now, it's not for everybody. There's a lot of complexity and sophistication around that, so speak to your broker and your accountant, but there's always a way. Mm. Never let money get in the way of a good opportunity, as my mentor told me a bazillion years mm-hmm. away.
Yeah.
I think that's it, Vic.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And again, it is property checkmate at the moment. If you're unsure of whether you're playing the
right game,
whether it's Queen's Gambit or not, reach out to us through the socials or go to our website, rightpropertygroup.com.au, and hit the contact me button. And we will...
There's our Facebook Lives every second Thursday.
Yes.
We've got our other podcasts with Phil Tarrant from SPI, Smart Property Investment.
Go back to all of our previous episodes if you're new to us. There is a lot of information that we impart based on our years of experience in the market and our tag on the market on a daily basis. So feel free to share our podcast. And if you needed to either chat with myself or Steve, we're just an email away.
And please do us a favor, as we always ask, give us a like in Spotify or iTunes, whatever it may be. It goes a long way for the people in behind the scenes, and the more people like it, the more we feel motivated to keep doing it, in short. But that's it for another fortnight. Our next podcast will be with Phil back on board, as we mentioned, from SPI, and we will see you all then.
The information featured in this podcast is general in nature, does not take into consideration your financial situation or individual needs, and should not be relied upon. Before making any investment, insurance, tax, property, or financial planning decision, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.